Today's Veterans Radio program is dedicated to all the veterans who have served and all the active duty men and women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan today.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America. How are you? This is Dale Thronberry here at the studios of Veterans Radio at Ave Maria Radio in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we're welcoming you back to Veterans Radio after our two-week celebration of Gary Lilly's life. And we wanted to get back to the program. Joining me in the studio this morning is our partner. See, I said, I'm still working in threes here, folks.
I got a
picture of Gary here sitting in front of me. Those of you on the webcast, if you're looking at it, we got our friend, the Big Boy, just to remind you that Gary always had breakfast at the Big Boy.
Every week. I saw him more times than probably, if he would have had a wife, you know, every week for 3-4 hours, mm-hmm. we would be with Gary. And it would start at the Big Boy about 6:30 in the morning and breakfast.
I had everything all planned out. I was going to go straight into a program today, but we couldn't help it, folks.
But I did want to say hello to everybody out there.
Yes, thank you, Bob.
We
wanted to do that and remind people.
Every little bit counts.
That's true. And for those of you who have been sending us emails and calling us and everything, we just wanted to thank you so very much for your condolences and your concerns, and you wanted to know how you could help celebrate Gary's life. Well, one way that you could do that is you could send a contribution to Veterans Radio by way of Ave Maria Radio. And let me give you the address for this. It becomes a tax-deductible, I know that's kind of crass to say right now, but it is a tax-deductible contribution to Ave Maria Radio. And if you send that, your contribution to, again, Ave Maria Radio, Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. That's Ave Maria Radio, Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. And down in the memo, write down Veterans Radio - Gary Lilly.
Okay, now I want to say a few things, folks. Now, I've known Gary a long time, and I know what Gary would be saying right now. So, in honor of Gary, I would say a double sawbuck would be what Gary would want to order up. Now, if you all know what a double sawbuck is, why does Gary know that? Because he's from Detroit, Michigan, and he's the guy, Mickey Shore, would talk about that. Mickey Shore, you don't know that because you're from New Jersey, Dale.
What do I know?
And he'd talk about a double sawbuck, which is 210. So, folks, if you're looking for what would be a nice little contribution, and that would certainly reflect what Gary would be thinking about. So, why don't you give that address again, Dale?
I will do that. It is Ave Maria Radio, Box 504, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. Down in the memo, write down Veterans Radio / Gary Lilly. And we will keep track of all of those and let you know how it's going. We're going to be doing some other things for Gary in the future, and we'll be coming back to talk to you about that later on. But again, thank you all so very much. His memorial last weekend was emotional to all of us and very touching. And we want to thank the 300 to 400 people that showed up.
They were old, young, mm-hmm. white, black, brown, Asian.
This guy had influenced an awful lot of people.
I looked around and saw that. I do want to say one quick thing, one very quick thing. When we came outside, after there was a little bit of rain, folks. In fact, a lot of rain in the morning. And Gary always talked about he didn't want to walk in mud again. Well, we did the walking in mud for him. But when we came out from the memorial at the auditorium and to do a little something at the Veterans Memorial outside, the rain had stopped. It stopped raining, but it was very humid, and still there was nothing, and the flags were hanging down, straight down, and they were wet. Now, this is a true story, folks. When the service started outside, we had a service indoors, and now there was a quick service outside with taps and a 21-gun salute, etc. Right at that time, the wind picked up. That American flag, the POW flag, and the VVA flag all of a sudden became unfurled. I poked the person next to me and pointed up and said, look at this. This is from nothing to this breeze, right? And it lasted throughout the outdoor ceremony. And everybody started to break up at that point. And I turned around and I was going to my car and looked. And the flags were limp again. So y'all can draw from whatever you want to draw what caused that, but that's a true story. It really happened. He was there, folks.
Well, we knew he was there.
His spirit was there.
We certainly sense what was going on there, and we do appreciate, again, all of you people out there. I want to remind everybody that today's program is actually going to be, Bing West is going to be on, and we're going to be talking about his newest book and some of the things he's been involved with called The Wrong War, about Afghanistan. And if you want to watch some of the slides, pictures that go along with the interview, we've got those up on our webcast. You can watch that, and we'll be talking to Bing in just a moment. But I've got one more thing I want everybody to start thinking about. And, you know, we all know that the World War II generation, and many of our minds at our age, was the greatest generation. And we agree with that, but then as we go along, each generation becomes the greatest generation. On the cover of Time magazine this week, which is just out, is a story called The New Greatest Generation. And on the cover, there are five Iraq-Afghanistan veterans standing there. One is Paul Rykoff, who is the president of the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America. There are two guys from a Purple Heart Society that build homes for Purple Heart recipients. One you can see in the picture is a double amputee. These men and women are stepping forward and doing what they feel they have to do. And this, it's a great article, and we are pursuing this story right now, and we're hoping to get some of those people on in the next couple of weeks. I think it's so important. Don't forget these young veterans that are out there. These men and women are forging the path for all of us. If they didn't do what they're doing, and when we talk to Bing, we'll probably get into this a little bit more, those wars could be right here, folks, not over in Afghanistan, not in Iraq. And it's not that we want to have three front wars, but we have to support these men and women. Nobody hates war more than veterans. Remember that.
Afghanistan, that's the line in the sand, folks. That's it.
It is.
That's the line in the sand. That's been there ever since when the Russians were there, and now the Americans, and we have to hold that line. We have to hold that line in Afghanistan.
And we're going to be talking about how we're going to do that with our guest, Bing West, after our first break. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after this.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the rain they call, the city of New Orleans.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and good morning, America. We are, hopefully, your favorite sons. You are listening to Veterans Radio, coming to you live from the Ave Maria Studios in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joining me on the line right now is our guest, Bing West. Bing is a Vietnam veteran, a writer of great books about the experiences that he had in Vietnam, some training manuals about how to deal with counterinsurgency. He was also a guest on Veterans Radio about 2 years ago, I believe, with his book entitled The Strongest Tribe.
That's a great book.
About the war in Iraq, and now we're in Afghanistan with The Wrong War. Bing, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale.
So what's the wrong war? What's happening that you feel that we're doing it the wrong way?
Well, common sense. We went there because terrorists killed us in New York City, and therefore we went to destroy those terrorists. Instead, we allowed them to escape into Pakistan, and then we turned aside from our basic objective, which was get the terrorists who were the danger to us, and decided that we would create a nation in Afghanistan. And so we've been nation building there for 10 years, dealing with a group of tribes that are hurtling headlong into the ninth century. And we can't achieve that. We don't, the United States Army and the United States Marine Corps don't know how to nation build, and it's the wrong mission for them.
Well, it's interesting, and for those of us out there who would like to ask Bing a question or get in on the conversation, you can give us a call at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. You were in Vietnam, and you were involved in counterinsurgency and trying to win the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese. Do you see any similarities between these two?
No.
Okay, that's good to know.
Well, we, as Americans, have to keep some humility to us. And we have a hard time here trying to get Americans to agree that we're not going to go over the cliff with our own debt. Mm-hmm. And we can't even do that. And we go to a country halfway around the world that is Islamic. I mean, deeply Islamic. And they're tribal. This is like going into the West in 1865 and dealing with the Comanches and the Apaches and saying, do I have a deal for you? I want you to become part of a democracy. We just can't do it. And we don't know what the secret is that causes somebody to want to fight for his country or for his village. We can't win hearts and minds. We can give away a lot of money, and we're doing that. But I think we simply have to have the common sense to cut back on what our objectives are and do what's best for America.
Well, you mentioned in your previous book, The Strongest Tribe, that Iraq was very, they were more centralized, I guess would be the word I'm looking for. And you were able that we were able to work with the Sunnis and the Shias there. But in Afghanistan, there is no particularly strongest tribe, is there?
That's correct. But there is, really. In Afghanistan, there's 11 million Afghans who are the Pashtun tribe along the border with Pakistan. The Pashtuns believe that they're the strongest tribe in Afghanistan. And traditionally, they have been. The problem is the Taliban are Pashtun. And what happened in Iraq was that the Sunnis were thrown out of power by the United States of America when we overthrew Saddam and we put the Shiites in charge. The Sunnis then were helping the insurgents fighting against the Americans and against the Shiites. But at some point in that war, after about 3 or 4 years, some very brave Sunni sheikhs said, this is crazy. We're on the wrong side. We're now helping al-Qaeda terrorists, and the only people who really care for us, that can really help us, are the Americans. And they're the strongest tribe. So let's get on their side. That's what made the huge difference in the war in Iraq. There's no evidence, though, unfortunately, that the Pashtuns in Afghanistan have made that decision.
Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be the cohesion or the sense of nationalism in Afghanistan that there was in Iraq or in some other places. Is that how you read it?
There is no nationalism. There's tribalism, but not nationalism. So I've been suggesting for quite some time that we back off what our objective is, and we say, look, we don't want the terrorists to take over again. That's our basic objective.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that by building up a strong Afghan army and by paying them. And then we can gradually withdraw our own forces. Now, you're not going to have a perfect democracy by any means. And you're not going to have a good functioning modern economy. But my goodness, we may not have that here the way we're going. So I think at some point we just have to modify our objectives.
You've spent many trips embedded in Afghanistan.
And I'm going back again tomorrow. Yep.
Jeez, okay, well, we're going to look forward to the next report from you.
I'm going back again at the invitation of General Allen. He's the senior general over there, and I'm going to travel around the country again. I do it every couple of months.
Some people are just gluttons, I guess. I don't know what they're...
Well, you know, once you're an old Marine grunt, you know, it never quite leaves you.
That's true. It's for some people that are looking at us on the webcast, we've got a couple of photos that we're putting up there of being in Afghanistan with some of the troops. Most of us don't really have a good picture of what Afghanistan is like. Could you describe that country to us from a physical standpoint?
Sure. It's really like if you're out west and you look at the Sierras, the high mountains along the edge of California. That's northern Afghanistan. That's what you see in the postcards, those soaring mountains in those small valleys. Then the southern half of the country, it's like you went into Nevada and Arizona. It's flat. There are just two major rivers. Most of the population live along these two rivers. So you really have a northern sector that are the big mountains and a southern sector that are small strips of farms that extend for hundreds of miles. And unfortunately, you have this border next to them with Pakistan, just to the east. And Pakistan, no one's really in charge in Pakistan. They're allowing these insurgents to use Pakistan as a sanctuary, and the sanctuary is 1,500 miles long. I mean, it's as long as our border with Mexico. And so we have this kind of war among the tribes. This could go on for another 100 years.
It certainly sounds like it. Part of my mission when I was in Vietnam is that we would fly troops in and out of Cambodia and in the dark, very low.
Jungle, yeah.
And it was very, I guess that's a similarity that I see. They always would run back across the border and they'd be safe because we weren't supposed to go and get them.
Correct. And there's no such thing as a real border. I mean, it's
right.
One tree is in Vietnam, the other tree is in Cambodia. What's the difference? And that's the same that you find in Afghanistan.
Well, I look at the photographs of Afghanistan, and it's by our standards. And I guess that's the thing that we always have so much difficulty is, we're looking at it from our point of view and our lifestyle, and so we can't understand why somebody would want to live in the 8th century. But there's really not a whole lot of options out there, is there, for some of these people anyway?
I've been in these wars now for 10 years, and I am very, very, very leery of Islam. I don't mean that in a derogatory manner. I mean that Islam is both a religion and a way of life, and there is no seminary in Islam. There are no trained priests or reverends that have gone to school. There is no hierarchy. The way Islam works is you have people who say, I know more than you do about this religion, and they emerge as the populist speakers, the itinerant preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they say things that seem powerful enough, they get people to make contributions to them. But there's no overlying structure. And once you get the true radicals who say that we want to be back in the 9th century and it's fine to kill everyone and murder everyone, including other Muslims,
mm-hmm.
you have an entire breakdown of a religion should bind people in a notion of love and in a notion that there's something more than their selfishness. And what I'm very wary of in Afghanistan and in Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
much of the Islamic religion has been hijacked by the radicals who are true murderers, and they have perverted the religion. And it's very hard for us as outsiders, I mean Christians from America, to get on the same wavelength with them. And so when you say, you know, they want to live in the ninth century, but they're terrible toward their women. They're just awful. And until they, the Muslims themselves, break out of that attitude toward life, there's very little that we as Americans and as Christians can do about it. And so for us to be over there trying to make a modern democratic nation, I just think is wrong. We can't do it.
Well, I can't agree with you more, Bing, because, you know, we don't understand. I mean, many of us here in America, the Muslims that we know, you know, I guess the term would be moderate, but they're working the religion from the side of love and helping each other and so on and so forth. And as you mentioned,
you're Americans. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're Americanized. Yes,
yeah.
And you adapt.
They're not over in some tribe that, you know, was back in the 8th century up in the mountains in Afghanistan. I mean, they'd be horrified if they went over. They'd say, holy smokes.
Yeah, what happened? How did this go on? Yeah, I wanted to talk about the region. You spent a lot of time with this, the last book, The Wrong War, up in the Congo. Is that what it's called?
Korangal, yeah.
Korangal. Could you talk a little bit about the troops that are over there? Because it's an amazing story what these men did, are doing.
Well, the most amazing thing is, and you're going to be reading about it in 2 weeks, there's a young man by the name of Dakota Meyer. He was a corporal. He's about to get the Medal of Honor, fortunately. I worked for 2 years to try to get him there. And I wrote about him in my book.
Right.
But it was amazing. You're up in these mountains, they're called the Korangal area, along the Pakistani border. And this relates to what you were saying earlier about veterans. Here's this young man. He's 21 years of age. The village called Ganjigal had asked them to come in to help with the mosque. And so Afghan soldiers, 100 of them, and their Marine and Army advisors went into the village to help them. It turned out to be an ambush and a trap. They were betrayed. And when they got in there, all the jihadist fighters were waiting for them. And there was a horrendous fight. Everyone was falling apart. This 21-year-old corporal seized control of the battle and charged in on a Humvee with a machine gun to try to break the ambush. He was the only thing moving on the battlefield. As he told me, he said, you know, he said, Bing, when I was going along, I kept seeing all these bodies, and he said it was like a bad Hollywood movie, and I kept thinking, not all of them can't be dead. All of the Americans and Afghan soldiers can't be dead. And he said, then I'd see one or the other waving his hand a little bit, and they were pretending they were dead because the fire was so heavy. And he said, at first I thought it was raining, and then I realized it was all the bullets hitting my Humvee. He did that 5 times in the course of 7 hours. And finally routed the enemy, and he saved something like 24 Afghan soldiers and Americans, and he killed a dozen or two dozen of the enemy. And he just came off of came from a farm in Middle Kentucky. He had the classic middle American values of Audie Murphy or Sergeant York. And thank goodness we finally got it to the point where people recognized that people like him really exist. I mean, we didn't invent him. He really did this. And the president is finally going to acknowledge and give him the Medal of Honor. And it shows, to me, that battle showed a couple of things. It showed the true valor and toughness of the American soldier. He's much tougher than anybody else on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And it also showed that you cannot trust the tribes because they march to a different drummer. On the one hand, they ask you to come in to help with the mosque, and then they kill you. And then a week later, they were saying, well, if you build a road for us, everything will be fine.
I was so amazed at the story in this book. We're talking with Bing West, and his newest book is The Wrong War, and I strongly encourage our audience to go out and get this book. It clarifies a lot of different things. But the main issue that I was looking at in here was the bravery, the morality, I would say, of the American troops over there. We only hear the negative stuff, and it's I'm so sick of hearing just the negative stories about these men and women over there that are working so hard to do the right thing. And as you say, the pictures in your book, that they go into these, I forget the name of them, you know, they go in there and have this tea. They sit down with the village elders and they try to negotiate. You know, they want a road, they want this, they want that. And then they find out that when they go to build the road, the bad guys are waiting for them.
I mean, it drives me nutty because, you know, I came out of the Marine grunts from Vietnam, and, you know, that was pretty tough. And we try so hard to be nice that sometimes it's frightening for me when I look back and think, wait a minute, we're in a war here. You know, there are limits to how nice you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think we've achieved our objectives there. I think with many fewer Americans, we can ensure that terrorists never again attack us from Afghanistan.
Well, we can only hope so. We can only hope so. And I want to talk some more about some of these other people that are in your book, and I'll give you an opportunity to bring up the ones that you wanted to talk about. I'm just amazed when I hear about these men walking down these valleys, and you know the insurgents are always higher up, it seems. And how to fight these battles, because I was a helicopter pilot, so, and I was on call a lot to go into emergencies, but most of the times we didn't have to deal with mountains that were 3,000 feet high. And so a lot of times helicopters are not able to get in to help these guys. So, you know, what do they do?
And any company commander is going to tell you the same thing. If you're in the northern part of Afghanistan, and we've been basically pushed out of a lot of the north, the mountains go up to 10,000 feet. When I was in the Korngal and these other places, I was just talking about Dakota Mire, that's the mountains started at 5,000 feet. And by the time you walk 2,000 vertical feet with 80 pounds of armor as an American, it takes you probably an hour to 2 hours. So, and the insurgents that you're fighting have been walking their whole lives, and they don't have armor on, so you can't possibly catch up to them unless you have helicopters. Now, the interesting thing, Gary, about, you know, we stick a shock and we don't consider it in terms of prices. We had 10 times as many helicopters in Vietnam as we do in Afghanistan, because the per unit cost of a helicopter is 10 times more today. And it's like, okay, the helicopter today may be a little bit better, but we've paid a huge price in not having the quantity that we need. So we cannot fight up in those mountains because we don't have the helicopter lift to get up there, and we can't walk up there.
I was amazed when I was reading again in your book about the just trying to get the logistics of getting up the hill. We've got about a minute before we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour. But I wanted to just briefly, you mentioned the lack of a number of helicopters, and plus every time you planned a mission, you had to allocate for them and say, okay, we're going to go up the mountain, our helicopter's available, and sometimes they were and sometimes they weren't.
Right, and the other problem, there are two problems. When you start humping up a mountain, you're going to be exhausted in about an hour.
Mm-hmm. Hmm?
So you need resupply. And then if you get into a firefight, you have to be able to evacuate somebody. So you need somebody in quick reaction forces standing by. And when you try to plan that and you don't have enough resources, then you realize why we only go on an operation about once every 2 weeks. So it really constrains how much you can do in the mountains.
Wow. Well, we're talking with Bing Weston. We're going to be taking a break here in just a minute. He's the author of The Wrong War. He's also the author of The Strongest Tribe. We're going to come back. We're going to see about how are we going to extricate ourselves from Afghanistan in the next couple of years, I hope. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Specialist Roz McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this.
Pouring rain, it's still dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
PSC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
On December 4, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2, 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
We just want to talk to you about U.S. Wings.
U.S. Wings.
Today. U.S. Wings is a sponsor of Veterans Radio, and we want to thank them so much. And we encourage everyone to go to their website, that's uswings.com, for the finest in military wear, including the amazing leather jackets that they provide for the Army, the Air Force, and all of the other military units. Plus, civilians, you can buy those old B-17 jackets with the lambs
wool inside. Where are you going to find one of those? That's a garage sale, maybe.
Well, no, you go to uswings.com for
that's
one
right.
thing, and they're down in Hudson, Ohio, and we had the honor, I would say the honor, of going down there in May and meeting with Sergeant Hack and the rest of the crew at U.S. Wings, and what a great facility. And if you want to talk about somebody that supports veterans, this is the organization
also,
to talk to.
Also, all of their merchandise is manufactured in America.
That's true. There are many of their plants are in New Jersey, I found out. I said, oh, good. Thanks for providing jobs. They need them there. Well, we wanted to thank Sergeant Hack and encourage all of you to go to uswings.com. You can get jackets. You can get sunglasses. You can get military knives, all kinds of things. If you're with
P-38.
That's right. You get the little can openers.
Where are you going to find one of those?
That's right. This is the place to go. And from when you call them up and order something, tell them that you heard about them on Veterans Radio. That's U.S. Wings. Go to uswings.com.
You're listening to Veterans Radio, broadcasting from our flagship station, WDEO, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the Ave Maria Network.
And we're back on Veterans Radio talking with Bing West, a Marine, because I know there are no such things as former Marines.
Ex-Marines.
Ex-Marines. I mean,
former is cool.
I don't know if they... No, they're still Marines. You guys are always Marines, aren't you?
I think so.
I think so, too. Bing West is the author of The Wrong War, Grit Strategy and the Way Out of Afghanistan. So now we're there. We've got the surge going. Now we're starting to draw down. What do we do next? What do you think is going to be the solution, Bing? Stumped him.
What I think the solution is going to be is going to be very messy. That's not what I would prefer, but what I believe is going to happen is quite simple. President Obama already cut short the surge, despite and surprised all the military commanders. None of the military commanders knew he was going to do this. Cut short the surge next year before he runs for re-election. That was, in my judgment, a calculated political decision, and the military had no idea it was coming. I believe that the White House, the president, will continue to cut, period. And I think that's the wrong way to go, but you're asking what I think is going to happen. I think that's going to happen. And then the other thing, and I've testified before both the Senate and the House and told them, please don't do this, but I think they're going to do it. They're going to start cutting the amount of money that we're sending to the Afghan armed forces to pay their salaries.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope I'm wrong on that, but that's what we did in Vietnam. We, as a country, were very divided in Vietnam, and further divided by President Nixon and the Watergate scandal in 73. However, the Congress was so fed up with Vietnam, that beginning in 72, once we withdrew our troops, they cut the aid. So there was no aid to South Vietnam in 1975 when it fell. Then many in the country said, well, South Vietnam fell because they were corrupt. They weren't worth us. At the same time, we didn't acknowledge that Russia and China continued to help the North, and we just walked away from the South. I'm afraid that our Congress, under a lot of pressures, could in a couple of years start doing the same sort of thing to Afghanistan. Just cutting it, because it's you have to cut somewhere, and these aren't Americans. So I think we're probably going to have a mess in Afghanistan in a couple of years. However, there are messes around the world, and it really doesn't make that much difference to us. Well, what I mean by that is I don't believe, as I said, that you're going to find the terrorists taking Kabul. So that the press will just ignore Afghanistan in a couple of years. We'll withdraw our troops, and it'll go back to being another very impoverished country with a lot of chaos that we don't pay too much attention to.
Well, it's sad, because that's one of the legacies, unfortunately, that many of us that served in Vietnam do live with, is, you know, just walking away.
Right.
And, you know, you hate to do that, because it almost makes it meaningless what the men and women were doing for 10 years in Afghanistan or 10 years in Vietnam.
Well, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, what's the next little issue that's going to flare up, you know, in the world, and people are going to say, well, no, we're not going to go help them, or for whatever reason we're going to go in and start helping somebody else. And it never seems to be any rhyme or reason other than, this is cynical, but it always seems to be economic.
Yes. I mean, we've seen this movie. You know, I wish it were going to turn out differently. If I had my druthers, if I were king for a day, I'd try to make it different. But, you know, if we get back to the basic point that I keep trying to make, if we get back to why did we go there in the first place, if it's just to prevent the terrorists from taking over, then we don't have to be doing a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But no one picks up on that. It drives me batty.
It does. Bob had a question he'd like to ask
you. Yeah, this is Bob Goulding. Okay. Bin Laden is gone. Now, that's the, in my opinion, the ace in the hole, the one that's held down there in your pant leg. So now we've got Bin Laden gone. What could that, in the most positive scenario for the United States, what would that mean in Afghanistan?
The way in which we disposed of Bin Laden, Bob, is a huge high point. And by that I mean we had spies and people in the CIA that were good enough. You give us long enough, we're going to get you. Mm-hmm. It's like being on the FBI 10 Most Wanted, even Whitey Bulger, they eventually got him. We're not stupid as a country. And once we decide to get you, we're going to get you. And so you had a terrific spy network working in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. That still exists. The other thing that's remarkable that I never thought as an infantry officer I would see, but I have now seen with my own eyes, our ability to use our air with video and with cameras to watch everything that happens on the ground is astonishing. So that anyone who walks outside in Afghanistan or Pakistan, anywhere we want, we can identify that human being individually. I have been out on patrols a few months ago with the Marines down in the south, and we were getting fire from some houses and a compound about 200, 300 yards to our right, and the sergeant is on this small radio called a 148. He's talking to somebody, and he said something like, Chosen 62, what do you got? And this other voice comes back and says, well, I have three on a housetop, and then I have one, another 100 meters farther out from you, and he has a long rifle. And the sergeant said, or he said, what do you want me to take out? And the sergeant said, take out the long rifle. And all of a sudden, about 30 seconds later, there's this whoosh, and an F-18 came roaring in. I had no idea it was up there. Fired its gun and rolled out again and said, taking care of that one. The pilot in the F-18 at about 16,000 feet had a system that enabled him to identify people on the ground with rifles and talk to the sergeant that I was with. I mean, that's fantastic. And when we went in against Bin Laden, we had people watching that compound, and they had no idea we could do that. That still exists, and that's a huge plus for us, Bob. Consider, if you're a terrorist, what are the things you need in order to be a pain in the neck or to attack us or Westerners? First thing you need is electricity. I mean, you have to be able to talk, you know, to people, and you have to be able to use your computer like Osama bin Laden was doing. The minute you do that, we got you. Sooner or later, we got you. Then you need a place that you can sleep at night. You can't spend all your time in a cave. The minute you have a house and you spend some time there, we're going to get you. Then you have to move. Ooh, the minute you move, we're going to get you. So I am fairly confident that even when we don't have a great nation in Afghanistan, we have some capabilities that make it impossible for those terrorists to get together and attack us.
I think that's a great point. I was just thinking of how Bob and I were talking a little bit during the break about how come we can't get the helicopters up into the mountains, and I was trying to explain it. We don't have as many as we used to. And
right.
The way that the technology has changed, one of the missions I flew in Vietnam was called a people sniffer. And we would fly around low level with these, I can't remember. Anyway, it was
sure,
major.
I remember them. Yeah.
And we were measuring the amount of ammonia in the air to find out where the bad guys had gone to the bathroom. And it was,
exactly.
Bad guys are here.
We called it something else, but yeah.
I'm on radio here. Radio. But yeah, and I'm thinking about how primitive that was and how dumb it was to be going around so slow, waiting for somebody to go to the bathroom and say, oh, there's one over there. Let's get him. But this technology that you mentioned is about the only way that we can do these battles and wars without so many troops. And I think it's going to end up protecting our men and women in the long run.
It does. You know, just one other little thing for your audience, just kind of interesting. When you go to any of our outposts now, they all have blimps. Every outpost, when you're in the tough areas, has a blimp tethered to a big cable that's above you 5,000 feet up in the air. And in the blimp is a 24-hour-a-day video cam, and then there's a lance corporal who's sitting in a tent, and he can see anything out to 5 miles and zoom in at any given time. It's wild. And no one can shoot down the blimp. It's very difficult to shoot down a blimp because it's up so high that the law of gravity, when you try to shoot bullets or something, they're working against gravity, and they can't get up there to hit the blimp.
Wow. We're coming up on another break right now. We're talking with Bing West, author of The Wrong War. When we come back from this break, Bing, I want to talk about some of the men that you met over in Afghanistan. The story of these brave young men and women is just astounding. You're listening to Veterans Radio here on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Now, we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio talking with Bing West, author of The Wrong War. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call at 877-573-7825. And just before we took the break, I asked Bing if he could think of some of the individuals that he met that he talks about in the book The Wrong War. Who would you like to talk about?
Oh, there are so many, but I do have some funny little ones. There was this wonderful sergeant by the name of Kiteglider, and Kiteglider, I was out in the middle of nowhere in southern Afghanistan with him, and he had been in motor transport for one tour, and he didn't want to make the Marine Corps Korea, but he felt he really hadn't seen the action, he hadn't been a grunt. And so he stayed for another time, and he told his wife, I really have to do this, and he came back for another 4 years. He did 3 or 4 years in Iraq, and then he comes back and comes to Afghanistan. So, and he loved his squad. So we're down there, and I am out camping. I call it camping out. You know, my wife refers to Afghanistan as my spa.
Within
lose 10 or 15 pounds. And we're out in the middle of absolutely nowhere in this desert, and the interpreter who's with us, a nice young man, and you know, by the name of Faz. Faz gets to know me after 3 or 4 days, and he walks over, and every night we were just staying wherever we were, in the middle of a field. You just lie down and go to sleep, then you get up before dawn and move quickly so that the Taliban didn't know where you were, and there were 12 of us with Faz. Faz takes me aside, and he says, sir, I don't understand. He said, I was very happy in Kandahar. I had this wonderful job, paid $300 a month or $400 as an interpreter. One day I am asked, I have to help with this new unit called the Marines, and we're going out on an operation. He said, I've been on operations with the United States Army. I was happy to go with them. I was told they were wonderful fighters. He said, I have now been with you for a week with this Sergeant Kiteglider. He said, we sleep in the dirt at night. He said, we eat this food that is plastic, meaning the meals ready to eat. He said, you know, we don't have any air conditioning. He said, it is not like I had when I was on the base with the United States Army. He said, I want to know, what did your Marine Corps do that causes your government to be so angry with them?
That's true. I think those guys, you guys just like to be out in the spa, I think. We've got a question for you, Bing, from a listener. I've got Jim Palazzolo on the air. Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale.
Got a question?
Yes. I don't know that I heard you speak to this, but what are your considerations about the political ramifications of being in this war? As we all know that, you know, when you mix politics and the military, which is always what's happening here, you have nothing but trouble. But can you comment on the current political reason to be in Afghanistan?
Okay.
I think it has totally faded. I don't think there are politics anymore. And by that I mean, consider when we had the draft in Vietnam, and we had many young men who were afraid afraid of going there because they didn't want to fight. And they started a huge movement, political movement. Now that you have everyone as volunteers, and they volunteer twice. They volunteer once to be in our military, and then they volunteer a second time to be in the infantry. And they want to see combat. I mean, these are tough kids. They are so separate from the rest of society that there is no political ramification. We ask our society to make no sacrifice for the war. It really isn't in the newspapers or anything anymore too much at all. And you have total volunteers fighting it, so it's kind of like it's out of sight, out of mind. It ranks number 18 on the list of concerns that people mention to their congressmen. So we've gotten to the point where we have a professional army, and we're willing to let them fight, and they're perfectly willing to fight. The only thing that's going to interfere with that politically is a cost.
Well, yeah, I don't think that, you know, the cost is something that we are concerned about as we go forward with this whole thing in Afghanistan. So we got to be a little bit cautious about that. I agree with you. When we've got, you know, when we've got only 1% of the population that's defending all 99% of us, it's a little bit frightening. Don't you agree?
Well, I have another book that I'm coming out with called The 1% Generation, which, you know, Tom Brokaw talked about the greatest generation. And in World War II, 11% of all males between the ages of 18 and 36 were in uniform. Today, it's actually, Gary, less than one half of 1% of those who are qualified who come in. And do you know that 75% of all young males are not qualified to be in the military today? Isn't that scary about America?
That's very scary. I remember
very
reading
scary.
About that they couldn't pass the physical or the mental exam.
The physical or the mental. So we are actually getting in the military the top of the classes coming out of high school, not the bottom, the top. And they're very well motivated, but it says something about our country as a whole that 75% can't qualify to be in the military even if they want to be there.
I was just thinking, you're talking about the greatest generation and what these young men and women are doing today. And one of the goals of Veterans Radio and veterans, especially Vietnam era veterans, is to make sure that no one ever forgets what these men and women are doing for us. We cannot allow the politics or the press or whatever it is to ignore these people, because that's what's going to happen is that they're coming back damaged and broken. And when you're reading in the newspapers and listening to these various commentators talking about cuts in the budget, and one of the first things they start looking at is veterans. Pensions are too big, veterans benefits, the VA, here's a way we can save some money. That's such a whole bunch of baloney that it just can't be tolerated. And it's going to take people like you and people like us to keep these men and women in front of America's population, I think.
Well, there's no... Let me come at it a little bit of a different way. And a businessman said this to me the other day, which is very interesting. He said, consider... Well, first, 3 out of 4 people who serve in the military get out after 4 years, and they have nothing. They have no benefits, none.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones we really should be focused on, because this businessman was telling me after World War II, if you went to get a job, the odds were overwhelming that someone in every company you went into had served in the military and could immediately relate. So you had the old boy network you could work.
Absolutely.
Now that it's one half of 1%, you have companies that have nobody who served in the military, and they have no way of relating and understanding what the skills are that these young men bring to them. At the same time, I am concerned that if you look at how benefits are given to those who are most hurt or who believe they are most hurt. And by that I mean, for instance, post-traumatic stress disorder.
mm-hmm.
you automatically get $2,600 a month for the rest of your life if you say you have a problem, regardless of whether you're in combat, regardless of what it was, because we want to try to take care of everyone along those lines. But the young man who comes back, who is healthy, vibrant, he's been a hero, he wants something, he gets nothing. So we take, I think, very good care of those who have been damaged the most, and we take the least care of those who can give still the most back to society and be most productive. There are some people who are trying. For instance, there's a firm called Goldman Sachs, which gets bad publicity because supposedly they're all millionaires or something. Mm-hmm. Actually, Goldman Sachs, of all the companies, has been the one that has gone farthest out of its way to recruit veterans coming back to go to work for them. And I hope that gradually all of us are going to recognize that these young men who come back, who aren't going to the VA because they have PTSD or something, and they've lost seniority for getting union jobs or something, but they're the real leaders, and there have to be more companies like Goldman Sachs that recognize this and are willing to sort of say, those are the kinds of young men I want with me. And right now we have 16% unemployed among those who are returning from Afghanistan. And there's just something wrong in terms of the networking that occurs.
Absolutely, and that's something that we want to talk about in a couple of programs in the future, because I just read an article where a young man in Michigan was talking about trying to get a job or his old job, and he wasn't able to keep it because they were afraid he's going to be sent over again. He was going to be redeployed. Well, we don't want to spend the resources to train you, and then you're going to be going over again. And this is an issue that veterans have run up against probably forever. You know, they spend 2, 3, 4 years in the military, and they come back, and the people that have remained have progressed, and, you know, they're behind. And I'm sorry, I got to cut the interview short here, Bing. I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio.
My pleasure. Anytime, because you all do terrific work. So anytime.
I'll call you up in about 2 weeks when you go when you get back.
Again, we'll talk.
Let me know when you get back. Thanks so very much. As Bing West, author of The Wrong War, you've got to go out and read this story. You'll understand so much more about Afghanistan and what we're up to over there. I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio. If you want to support us, make your donation to Ave Maria Radio and with, you know, Veterans Radio in a memo, and we'll take care of that. It's on our website. Next week, we're going to have some great stories again. We're back, folks. You're listening to Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Join with Laity for Life in praying for the unborn. On the 25th of each month, a parish will host a Mass as part of a Novena for Life throughout the Diocese of Venice. To find out where future Masses will be held, visit laityforlife.org. That's L-A-I-T-Y for life.org. If you'd like to publicize your upcoming event on the Guild calendar, you can enter it yourself at avemariaradio.net. Click on Community Calendar on the left-hand side and then follow the links for adding an event. Your event will appear on the Internet calendar within a couple days. You can find many more events at our website, avemariaradio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
Veterans, need help with your VA benefit claim? Then call Legal Help for Veterans right now at 800-693-4800. To ensure the best possible chance for success, our attorneys at Legal Help for Veterans are devoted to VA claim appeals, and they will forcefully present your particular case. So make that call today to Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 for your no-charge consultation.